This first statement I'll make would apply to most of you, I think, given where we live. But my second statement, I don't think, would apply to you. I can't think of anything that the second statement would apply to. My first statement is that it's most likely that you or I, over the last few months, have seen some sheep. Likely? Yeah, we've got cars, we get about, don't we? We all live in an urban area, but we might see some sheep, at least this year. If I go for a walk down my road, I'm likely to see some sheep as well, because I've got a paddock out there. But my second statement, I probably wouldn't apply to you. It's most likely that you or I, over the last few months, have seen a shepherd. No? No, I don't think any of you have seen a shepherd, especially not the sort of shepherds that we're talking about in Palestine, on the Palestine countryside 3,000 years ago. Yet, even though we live in this world of paved roads, electricity, smartphones, fast cars, highways and shopping malls, I just mentioned the word shepherd and I think we're immediately transported to this other world, beyond the world that we exist in, particularly when we read Psalms 23, which is what I'd like to look at today. This modern world of fluoro lights above us and a very rich society, it doesn't keep us from this spoiling our appreciation of this wonderful psalm, the 23rd Psalm, which you might say is one of the most well-known psalms in the 150. It's the one I know best, and I suspect that you know it best as well. It's one I memorised when I was a young tacker. We sing it in hymns a lot, and I even recite it to my boys at night time to help them get to sleep. But it's a bit of a routine. So, it's a lovely psalm, and yet I notice when I recite it night after night, familiarity has its dangers. The words sort of become, just roll off our tongue, but they lose their edginess. They lose the words and the language that it tries to convey. So I'd like to go through this psalm today and give it some fresh meaning for us, given the New Testament revelations. And I'd like to push the imagery a bit in a particular part of Psalms 23, which may not have been pushed before. And I apologise, I just talked about the Christian calendar and how the sermons take from the daily readings, and this is the first time in a long time that I haven't. So this is a sermon I did a few weeks ago, and Angus has heard it before, so he could tell you all about it. But I want to leave, before I go into it, I want to ask you a question. The question is, who is this poem, this prayer or psalm about? Now, it's probably pretty obvious. Who is this poem, this psalm or prayer about? Psalms 23. Maybe you want to write down your answer or make a mental note. So we'll go into it and we'll read it. I might just read it from the screen. I think this might be the NRSV, New Revised Standard Version. But anyway, I'll read off the screen for you. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Psalms 23. The objective of this psalm is the shepherd, who is identified in the first two words as God, who is a shepherd. And we're given this 3,000-year-old picture of a shepherd in the desert in Palestine. And even though many of you wouldn't have seen a shepherd, Colin, have you seen a shepherd recently? No? Do they have shepherds? No. They have fences, don't they? Yeah. So many of us haven't seen a shepherd, yet when we read this, we're transported back into this time. The Lord is my shepherd. God is present. He is the front and centre of this psalm. And if you know your Hebrew poetry, does anyone know, if you want to pick up the main theme in Hebrew poetry, where do you go? The start, the end, or the middle? Middle. You go to the very centre to get the main theme. In the exact centre of this psalm is verse 4, which says, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, or even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." Shadow of death. What is that? You'd probably have different answers depending on who you are. Could be cancer. Could be dementia, depression, poverty, death, homelessness, risk of losing your job, aging, your own child in the grip of something addictive. Death, shadows. You can add your own fears in there. Things that are likely to undo your life. And so this psalm, it's about a shepherd, but the theme is God, who is a shepherd, who is with us in the shadow, whatever that shadow may be. And so this is what we see in the first half of the psalm. The first images we're given is of sheep in God's care, verses 1 to 2 and 3. Now, you've heard it before, and you'll probably hear it again, that sheep are known for their stupidity. Now, I tested this out at Ballarat and Bendigo, where they actually do own sheep on their property. But there are some smart sheep, no doubt. But for the most part, sheep are known to be quite stupid and do silly things. And I don't know if that makes you feel uncomfortable. We are sheep. I am like a sheep. So left to themselves, sheep in the ancient Near East in Palestine would wander aimlessly into danger. They wouldn't think about where they're going or what they're doing. They'd just go into a deep chasm, and just sort of get lost. They'd walk into the desert sun without any water. They would be easily attacked by beasts, lions, bears maybe. And just have a chat to Gordon McLaughlin in Bendigo. And every second week I go up there, his sheep have been attacked by dogs. And so they're very, very vulnerable. Sheep get in trouble quite easily. There's some lovely words in the first few verses here. Still waters and green pastures. And often I read this psalm and I think of lying on a beach somewhere with palms, still waters, dipping into the ocean. But is that what it's really about? Or maybe even sitting in front of a fire on a cold winter's night, this tranquility, this stillness. I don't think that is what the psalm is trying to convey. It talks about still waters, the green pastures, talking about the necessities of life, which God provides. And it says, talks about that we shall not want. Or you could translate as you have lacked nothing. But remember, the theme of the psalm is that God provides necessities in the shadow. He provides tranquility in the difficulties. It's not simply about lying on a beach somewhere where there's palms and nice sun. It's provision of life that we lack nothing in the shadow, in the valley. And it's also good to point out that in the ancient Near East, when the word shepherd was mentioned, it actually referred to king. The kings of the people were known as their shepherds. The king would protect their people, would provide. They rarely did. And yet it says here that God is our shepherd. He is the one that protects and provides. He is what a shepherd ruler should be. So verse 4 sort of informs the first three verses. It's theologically and structurally centred around verse 4, that at the moment of greatest threat, the moment of greatest need, God still provides. He is our shepherd. Now, the second part of the psalm changes tack a bit. It sort of changes tone, which is what I want to focus on here. And I find this section a bit hard to figure out at times, but I like to put a proposition forward to help. Verse 5 says, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows." Just wonderful pictures in there. Now, it changes here. The shepherd, I would say, remains the shepherd. This time the shepherd isn't looking after the sheep. The shepherd is now a host. You couldn't picture a shepherd dwelling in the desert somewhere and he's back in his tent and now he's putting on a meal and he's a host of this meal. So the shepherd remains a shepherd, but the sheep now becomes a human being. There's a change. You notice that change in imagery. And the human being, I'd like to say, is a fugitive, a criminal. Do you know what a fugitive is? Someone who's on the run. Someone who's done something wrong and they're on the run. I like to say here that this, talking about verse 5, the person in this psalm is a fugitive. In verses 1 to 3, the dangers of the sheep are the beasts, the weather, the chasm, the mountains, the natural world. But here, the danger becomes the enemy in verse 5. Now, a bit about ancient cultures. In the desert or the wilderness, which is where shepherds lived, and caring for sheep, they wouldn't have them in the cities or the towns. It was quite a dangerous place. It was the wilderness. It was called the wilderness for many reasons. And often if a person committed a crime and was in danger of their life, guess where they would flee? To the desert, to the wilderness. And if they murdered another person, maybe accidentally, they would flee in the desert. And then in that ancient culture, people would start to chase after them and seek revenge and seek their life. And so the desert became a place where fugitives were hunted down in revenge. It was a place for sinners. It was a dangerous place of fear, of danger, of revenge, and probably certain death if you're running away. Eugene Peterson sort of puts a nice picture together talking about this culture. He says, "There was one huge exception to the unfriendliness of the desert, and that was the custom of open hospitality. Every wanderer, whatever his character or his past, was received into a shepherd's tent as a guest of God." That's a particular Arabic term. A visitor was called a guest of God. They were furnished with food and kept alive. The shepherd host took responsibility of his safety, and this custom still prevails today in Bedouin cultures. Now, the Bedouin people you might know, or they're also called the Bedou, they are a grouping of nomadic people, Arab people, who inhabited the wilderness regions around North Africa, the Arabian Peninsula, and Iraq and the Levant. So they still exist today. And one of the amazing parts of their culture is the hospitality to anyone who they came across. So it says in verse 5, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." It sounds like, I've often haven't understood this verse, but hopefully this can give you a bit of added meaning to it. It sounds like this person is threatened by their past sins. They have enemies. They're menaced by revenge, but they're welcomed into this shepherd's tent. They're served a meal and they're safe. I often recite this psalm, as I say, with my kids. And I think I probably missed a big part of the gospel when I was reading this. I often hear Psalms 23 and consider the psalm to be for the righteous, for the faithful person who finds themselves in trouble due to the dark, evil world that's around them. And so the psalm becomes a lovely psalm to realise that God is with us in the shadow. We have trials, we have heartache, we have persecution. Even though we trust and live in devotion to God, we're poor and needy, as it says in Psalms 86, we still find ourselves in these dark valleys, don't we? Things beyond our control. And rightly so, we start to call on this psalm, Psalms 23, for God to help us. But I haven't thought of this psalm also for the person who's done wrong. A faithful person, maybe, who has messed up. A sinner whose past follows them. Or someone who carries guilt, has done a mistake, has enemies, did something wrong, and the guilt that they're carrying is like a monkey on their back and they can't get it off. And I think this is what this psalm is trying to say to us. If you've messed up, if you disobeyed, if you've murdered even and fled into the desert, if you're a fugitive and you have enemies, this shepherd God is a God who will sustain you and give you what you need. It says, in the presence of my enemies. The enemies are at this table, which the shepherd is the host, and the enemies can see that God is taking care of the fugitive, of the sinner, whom they had oppressed and probably whom they wanted to kill. Now, you might be saying, hang on, where is the justice in this? You might say, if a person is a fugitive, a murderer, a sinner, how can I say that God will just sustain them and look after them? Don't they have to pay for their sins? You might also say, how can they be given a meal to the point where it says in verse 5 that their cup overflows? Not just sort of a meal thrown in front of them. This is an abundance given to the fugitive, to the one who has enemies. So you might say, how can I say that God will care for the fugitive, the sinner? Where is the justice in that? Isn't God a God of justice? So you may not agree with me with this picture, with a murderer having a table set before them. Yet, as we take into account the whole of the New Testament scripture, I think we find something very different. I'd like you to turn to John chapter 10 with me. So my question at the start was, who is this poem about? And I wonder what you wrote down or what you thought about. And you'd probably be right in saying that this poem is about a shepherd and it's about God, who is a shepherd. But do we know what a shepherd is? None of you admitted to seeing a shepherd lately. So where do we go to understand what a shepherd is? And I'd like to go to John chapter 10, because I think there's someone else, Jesus, who has the last words on Psalms 23. John chapter 10, I'll just read verses 1 to 11. You can follow along on the screen as well if you wish. Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but it was the Pharisees who did not understand what he was telling them about. Verse 7. Therefore Jesus said again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes in only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." And verse 11, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." A good test of a shepherd 3,000 years ago was how far he would go in protecting his sheep. The big question was, would he lay down his life for the sheep? Now, remember, the wilderness where the sheep were taken can be a dangerous place. The sheep got themselves in awkward positions. And the shepherd would have to risk his life to go and get the sheep and rescue them. And it wouldn't be an easy decision to make, I don't think. The risk of finding beasts in the mountains or in the chasms. And also, a shepherd living in the wilderness would likely host fugitives as well. And it wouldn't be an easy thing to host a fugitive. They're out for revenge, they're probably dangerous characters, and yet the shepherd, as the host, would bring them in. So being a shepherd put one's life at risk. It was a dangerous occupation. So when Jesus says, "I'm the good shepherd," it's not just that he was gentle and kind and the one who would be nice to the sheep. Being a good shepherd meant risking your life against the beasts, the murderers and the robbers. And as we've recalled recently in the Christian calendar, a few weeks ago, during the Passover season, didn't Jesus do just that? He entered Jerusalem, the Death Valley, a place filled with shadows of hate and murder, and he was killed. He died on a cross. And he died on the cross for all the wandering and lost sheep and the fugitives that had made mistakes. And this is where the justice comes into it. That God is a God of justice, yes. He wants sins to be paid for. And the way that they were paid for is that Christ paid for the price of those sins. He paid for the wrongs of the murderer. This is his way of justice. He laid his life down for the sheep. There's a lovely picture you might want to read, John 13 later on, when Jesus, who's a shepherd, he hosted some people at a meal, the disciples. And guess who was around that table? Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him and led to his death. You could say Judas was a fugitive. He's one whose sins he carried on his back. And yet Jesus blessed him on that last night and he gave him a meal. at the same time that Jesus went out and betrayed him. So, did Jesus do something wrong there, carrying the sins of a fugitive? Maybe. But then he was resurrected 3 days later after his death. He was vindicated. And now Christ walks with us, our shepherd, with us through the Spirit. He's our living shepherd who is with us. He's worked out justice for the fugitive, for the sinner, for the one who has enemies around the table. And this then started a new movement, a new community called the church, called Christians, and next week we celebrate that on the day of Pentecost. What Jesus did started something totally new in human history. So back to that starting question. Who is this psalm about? Who is Psalms 23 about? What did you write down? If you wrote down God, you'd be right. But if you wrote down Christ, Jesus, you would also be right. Because this would be tapping in to the full revelation of who God is in the flesh. That he is our shepherd. He is our good shepherd and only true shepherd. He leads us to still waters and green pastures, but he also has mercy on us fugitives as well, us who have done wrong and carrying sins. He takes those off us. And I think that's a pretty good news to share of who this God is, particularly for a world who is probably running away from stuff they've done, can't quite get to grips with the wrongs they've done. This is a God who takes on the fugitive and gives us a meal at his table and abundantly pours oil on our heads. Not only does he guide, but he also gives us grace. And so at the end of the psalm, we can say, may the goodness and mercy follow you all the days of your life, and may you dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.